You're listening to Radio Primavera Sound, proudly presented by Cupra.
Are you good, sir?
Yeah, I'm very good, yeah. I'm just in, where am I? It's a very good point. I'm in Seattle. I just did a gig last night.
Oh, no, how did it go?
Yeah, really good. I think it's one of my favourite gigs of the year, actually.
I was wondering, actually, because I haven't seen you live. I've never seen you solo live. Like, how does the new album sort of go across when you do it live? Because it seems very kind of introspective.
I'm not trying to be too completely faithful to the album, just because for me the main principle of the album is something of like growth. So then actually, if I'm faithful to the album, it's about actually charting the actual growth of myself as an artist, like day by day or month by month, as opposed to going, I'll take the growth that happened 2 years ago when I recorded it and then try to just replicate that going forward until the next album. So there's still that introspective vibe, but then it's like, as I play with different musicians, particularly as I move around the States, playing with people that I'd really like to play with, it just takes on, one, the form of the musicians that I play with, and then also the vibe of the audience and the particular venues.
So do you have a different band at each gig, or is it you kind of add different people depending on where you are?
It's been complex in that I've had certain cast members that have been reoccurring, but then it's been this kind of charted change of characters throughout the course of the year, where everyone knows the material and there's been a line that connects one gig to the next, but it's been more or less changing subtly. So it might be that, like one gig is a quartet. You know, for instance, I've been playing a lot with harp, trombone, flute and drums, and then some with trio with just harp, drums and flute. Yesterday was actually synth, drums and harp trio. So I've been trying to really explore like what happens with a trio dynamic. And actually on the album itself, the new recordings, most of the group's formations were trio, and then other things were added in post-production. But most of the actual interactions were either duets or trios. But for the actual European tour, it's a quintet, so it's two harps, synthesizer, piano and flute, which is a whole other thing, which I'm really looking forward to after doing all of these different American lineups, to have a consistent group for a major European tour.
I've got to say, I was literally just thinking today how much I like the trombone as an instrument. I kind of wish you were bringing that.
It'll come at some point, but I think double harp makes up for the lack of trombone, but there's something quite special about trombone and flute, melding together, sonically.
I was wondering, obviously the last 2 years have been sort of massive change for you, or that's how it seems from the outside, with disbanding two bands and kind of changing your main instrument, I guess, from the saxophone to the flute, to a variety of kind of flutes, I suppose. Like, how do you feel? I mean, after these kind of two, how do you feel now about the kind of changes?
It doesn't feel so dramatic to me, because the changes are only the outward changes, and that they're the changes of what the public get as the package show. Whereas the changes for me happened, maybe like 2 to 3 years before that, when I started mainly practicing the flutes as opposed to the clarinets, regardless of what the main focus of the public gigs were. So my main practice, or my main like kind of actually the artistic work, has been, trying to develop the flutes and actually a different vibe, and figuring out within me like what I'm comfortable with and what sounds I would like to hear. And that's been happening way before, the start of 2024. It just feels like what I practice at, for myself privately is reflected in what I do publicly, which is a real, it's great for me. So it just feels like there's some kind of unity of artistic direction at the moment. It's always a shame not to play in formations that have a history and that actually have that make great music together. But I just think that actually, things need to change. And if you embrace those changes, then good things happen. There's just a development, art development. That will mean that, you know, if slash render groups re-emerge, then there'll be something more artistically potent about the reason why we decide to play together, as opposed to it just being that, you know, the groups exist because they have existed.
I was reading when you were talking about the decision, and you talked, you said that playing the saxophone was physically draining, but also emotionally draining. I was kind of interested, what way is it like emotionally draining?
Well, I mean, it's the most, but if you think about the arc of the gigs of, like, say, any given Sons of Kemet or Comet's Comet gigs, you know, the arc is an arc that kind of relies on the principle of, like, tension and release. So gathering an immense amount of energy that kind of moves people off their feet, and then holding that energy and releasing it, which is fine, and that's good for, you know, for like any given gig. But then when it becomes a commodity, and when it becomes actually a part of just a touring cycle that happens, you know, month after month, year after year, where you're actually giving this massive amount of energy without respite. I was in two bands, or actually three bands if you count Back and the Ancestors, that all relied on the same level of emotional intensity in terms of generating that that tension. And, you know, the way that I generate the tension, other than just technically moving around the instrument, is to actually be emotionally engaged with what I'm doing. And like I said, it's fine. But actually, when it becomes something that's at the, you know, at the mercy of the market, and you find yourself gigging and, you know, like going from city to city to city without respite, then actually, it's just emotionally draining. If you're not 100% committed to that form of arc in the music, to that form of drama, and, you know, what I was practicing was a quieter and more introspective, and actually I think it's still emotionally intense, but just within a different form of emotional landscape. That's what I was, you know, like feeling within me. So it means that to actually go on stage and give another form of energy is draining, in that there's not a unity in what I'm practicing and what I'm going out there doing, or what I was practicing and going out there doing.
So you feel, am I right in saying you feel like different emotions come out when you're playing different instruments? Like you'll have like a, you know, you might sit down to play in one emotion, and kind of depending on what you actually play, some a different kind of feeling will come out.
Yeah, for sure. Because, you know, you're using, you know, there's different levels to it, in that you're playing instruments, but then the instruments themselves are informing how you relate, you know, to the sound. You know, like trying a good example. If you're playing the theremin, you'll have a very different emotional response to the sounds that are created to if you're playing the didgeridoo.
Hmm.
You know, there's just a different, it creates a different sound, and that sound puts you in a different atmosphere. And actually if you think about what it means to have an emotional landscape, it's just the atmosphere that you create and how it makes you feel specifically.
This may be a stupid question to someone who knows so many instruments, but is it basically the same technique to play the flute as to play, you know, the other kind of instruments that you play in the flute family, like the spirel, I want to say? I'm not sure if I pronounced it right.
Oh, yeah, the spirel. No, there are different schools of flute technique. So, for instance, there's the side-blown flute that's like similar to the classical Western flute. That's one technique that people kind of know more mainly. The shakuhachi, the kind of front-blown Japanese flute, is a different technique, and most classical flute players or players of the side-blown flute wouldn't necessarily be able to just pick up a shakuhachi and play it, because it's a smaller embouchure and it's a different intensity of air pressure. And it's just a different thing that's happening in terms of like how you're directing a very small airflow. And it's a lot more precise, and energy comes from a different place in the body. So that's a different technique. Then there's like the Native American style flutes, which I would put in the same bracket as the Srirel, and the recorder, which is more to do with like a low pressurized blowing, where you don't necessarily need such a big emphasis on an extreme technique to just get a sound. You can just kind of put it to your mouth and blow it and the sound comes out. But then the emphasis is actually on how you're generating the air pressure and the control you have at a kind of low intensity air pressure. So yeah, they're slightly different techniques for each of them. But then on some level, you know, when you get really advanced, it all kind of becomes the same thing, because it's just about sensitivity and how you have an awareness of the air flowing through your body, basically, and if you're allowing the thing that you're blowing to resonate.
Your excellent debut solo album, Perceive Its Beauty, Acknowledge Its Grace, was released earlier this year. It seems strange to call it debut solo album, but I guess technically that's what it is. One thing that I was reading about, that you were recording it, and you apparently told everyone to play as if they were playing the intro and outro of a song. What did that give?
What it gives is... that's a good point. How would I define it? But if you think about what happens in the intro and the outro of most songs, there's this kind of like bubbling energy that suggests that you're going to go to somewhere, but people don't want to like give too much because they feel like there's something else that's going to come that's the main event. So what I wanted to happen was not the main event, because in jazz, it seems like the main event often relies on a certain mode of tension and then release. And I didn't want the tension and release. I just wanted an open landscape. So that was the best way of like actually articulating to people the vibe that I wanted. It just needs to be like there's an album called Miles Smiles by Miles Davis. And the second track on that, Circle, and this is one of the tunes that I referenced to a lot of the band members. The outro of that is one of the greatest outros, I think, for me in jazz music, where it just really like decelerates and then kind of sits in this like still zone. And I wanted them to kind of think about that like the main musical events have happened, and we're just lingering in that space where we know it's going to end, but we're just enjoying the stillness of, you know, and the serenity of just like the sounds, and to just treat that as the main event.
I was wondering, like, when your the album was released earlier this year, it kind of felt like the jazz flute was coming into the mainstream a bit. I mean, you know, obviously Andre 3000 and things like that. Did that feel a bit weird to you? Because I mean, I guess for years, rightly or wrongly, probably wrongly, people didn't tend to talk all that much about the jazz flute, and then suddenly it was everywhere. Was it strange?
Not really. I mean, I don't really know what people talk about so much, because I'm just kind of trapped in my own world of practicing and just running around playing gigs. For me, it's all good. Like the more people can talk about, you know, acoustic music or creative music, the better. So I think it's all just kind of fighting the good fight in terms of like what people decide to kind of focus on in terms of trends of music. It's strange though, because people would talk about flutes, but then it seems that, you know, it's not like they were bringing up names like, you know, Magic Malik or Eric Dolphy, or, you know, Herbert Laws. It seems like there was just an excitement at the current state of the flute world. And for me, the interest is actually when you can bring what has been done and forgotten about into the foreground. And hopefully that can, you know, as we kind of progress with the flute just being a part of the general landscape, we can actually start exploring where it's, you know, like the... Yeah, just the people that have been more overlooked in the, you know, the flute world.
Magic Malik, who did, among many other things, the Saint-Germain albums, is that right?
I've not heard him on those. I've only checked out his own albums and heard him on some Oumou Sangaré albums also. But he's really one of my favourite musicians in general, but flute players in particular. And for me, he's like, you know, in terms of living flute players, he's one of the great innovators. And tragically overlooked, because his output is really prolific and he's, you know, a fantastic player.
I'll look it up. I think that might be him, but I might be wrong.
There's an album called Orchestra that's really good. So if you want to go to one particular album, yeah, Orchestra is a good one.
Well, thank you. You're playing 30th of October, Wednesday 30th of October, Parallel Seixanta Dos in Barcelona. I'm really looking forward to it. I've got to say, my wife will probably kill me, but she saw you your gig at Primavera Sound this year. Didn't know who you were before. In fact, I don't think she even quite knew the name afterwards, but she was absolutely blown away by it. She said, like, she was in tears. She said it was absolutely amazing. So, yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it.
Fantastic. Yeah, thank you.
You're listening to Radio Primavera Sound, proudly presented by Cupra.